Selling Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. It's time for Talking with TD.
Touchdown, Tennessee!
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut-up term.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN.
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. That's right. You are now talking with TD. I am your host, Teron Davenport. Appreciate each of you for tuning in. It's another week, another opportunity to talk some shop, so you know I'm fired up about that. A little bit of an allergy situation, so bear with me if you get a sniffle or a sneeze. I apologize ahead of time, but man, I am still not used to this Nashville situation as far as the pollen is concerned. But just like we've done the last couple weeks, we're going to move the Run TMC segment into the opening segment, and I mean, I'll be joined by my guy, Rolando Blackman. Let me get that music, Elijah. Yeah.
Okay.
That's right. Yes. I am joined by Chris Sanders, former Titans receiver. You hear him on the air on 102.5 The Game. You see him on the court. Well, actually, coaching on the court. Well, he's not coaching anymore. Old Reggie Theus looking dude. But that's all right. What's going on?
Man, what's up, Doc? Man, I'm just chilling, man, getting ready for the spring break. Got my beach body ready. And, you know, I'm kind of swole right now. So I'm ready to go do my thing, catch a couple of fishes. Not a couple of fishes, but a couple of fishes.
Oh, okay. So you've been getting that old man-do workout on to get that beach body,
Wow. No, man, that's cold, man. I'm about to hang up on that. You can't let the listeners know about that, man.
It's a secret. Well, you know what?
Yes, sir.
What's not a secret anymore is what this Titans team is doing with the franchise tag. They did not use the franchise tag, did not use the transition tag. Now Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith, if they are not signed within the next few days, are set to hit the free agent market. I know there's going to be interest for both of those players. You add Jayon Brown into the mix as well.
Yeah.
It's going to be very interesting. What is your take on the non-usage of the franchise tag?
I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know what direction you're in. And when I say this out of respect, because I respect Mike Vrabel and J-Rob, is, you know, you have three great players. You have Corey Davis, you have A.J. Brown, you have Jayon Brown. I mean, those are impact players that can make plays. So if it was me and I want to keep the chemistry of the team on defense, I want to keep the chemistry on offense, I'm trying to figure out a way to keep these guys. Look at Jonnu. Jonnu is a freak of nature. I mean, he's one of those rare tight ends that can do so many things, and you can spread out and use them in different ways on offense. I mean, if you look at the year before, I mean, he's in the backfield playing running back. I mean, he's playing tailback, and he runs a 56-yarder.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Corey Davis, who you know, everybody was saying when he first came in that he wasn't playing well, he's not worthy of the fifth pick in the draft and all those things. He had a breakout year this year, and he had camaraderie with Tannehill, and also he complimented A.J. Brown. So I'm confused. I don't understand, because those are the cats that you want to keep, the foundation of your team.
Well, let me ask you this, because, I mean, you've been around this game for a while. You know how this thing works.
Right.
Does the fact that they didn't place the tag on these guys, does that necessarily mean that they're gone?
I mean, if they don't sign them in the next couple of days, somebody's going to throw some money at them. I mean, everybody's looking for a big-time tight end, and everybody's looking for a big-time wide receiver. You don't think those guys are going to make a splash in the NFL? I mean, look at the Patriots. Do the Patriots have a number one wide receiver?
Nope.
No. So if Belichick says, hey, Davis, I'm going to give you $13, $14 million a year to sign with us, you don't think he's gone? And also to play with a coach like that? So those are the things, and those are the risks that you have when you don't put the franchise tag on a guy that's been a foundation of your team.
I'll tell you something interesting, too, that just popped into my head, because you know what Bill Belichick does. He always likes to sign guys that kill the Patriots.
That's what I'm saying.
Hey, listen, you know what Corey Davis, his first three touchdowns in the NFL came against the Patriots. You know what I'm saying? And I'm sure he remembers that Stephon Gilmore game where, and I point to that anytime somebody wants to challenge me about Davis's ability. Because right from the jump, I think it was like the second snap, that deep over 40-yard, and then he drew a pass interference, and the rest, you know what happened, 100 and what, 50 yards later with two touchdowns, guess what? So I could see the Patriots just in full Bill Belichick form making a play for Corey Davis. I just wonder if he would go. Yeah. And I think really it's going to come down to just balancing the money against the risk of going to a scheme that may not match his. And I think that's something that is going to be in the factor just because he's already seen what it's like to have so much talent and not be used correctly. And here it was. That's what happened last year. He was finally used in the right way.
But you know what's so special about Belichick is he gets players that feel disrespected.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That,
yeah.
I mean, you don't think Corey feels disrespected when they opt out of his fifth year? You don't think he feels that? You don't think that Belichick's going to say, okay, we want you over here. We love you. I mean, look at some of the guys that felt disrespected. Remember the running back Dylan?
Yes, sir.
That was with Cincinnati. He went there.
Corey Dillon.
Yep, and then you got Moss that felt disrespected. I mean, all these things. All these guys that they are picking up. What's the running back that he was with the Titans and he got cut and he went to the Patriots and won a championship? What was his name?
He
played for Oregon.
Blunt, because he went to the Bucks too.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So he's signing guys like that to where when the Titans cut him, okay, come over here. We love you. And all of a sudden that cat wins a Super Bowl. So they're picking up guys that are hungry. They're picking up guys that feel disrespected. You don't think Corey Davis feels disrespected because you opt out of a fifth year? You better come on with it, Doc.
No doubt about it. So that's going to be interesting how that plays out. And
Jonathan
Smith, I mean, the Bills, I'm sure, will be interested. Actually, I know, you know, from talking to some people up there, they're going to be interested. I would say Seattle as well. They need a tight end, and that would just bode exceptionally well for Russell Wilson and obviously for Jonathan Smith as well to have a quarterback like that. I want to see what happens. It's definitely something to watch, and they're continuing to make some moves to be able to get into position to do that. And one of the moves actually hasn't happened yet, but the reports are starting to come out that Kenny Vaccaro will be released.
Wow.
I that's an interesting proposition. For me, you know, when I watch Vaccaro, I always say this, he is a guy that I think epitomizes that team as far as the locker room is concerned, as far as setting the tone, as far as loving football, as far as being self-sacrificing, because I've seen so many times that guy has come down and taken on an offensive lineman so another guy can make the tackle. Mm-hmm. And I've seen so many times him just coming down and selling out, blowing. Remember the Patriots game? He blew up James White in the backfield.
Sure,
that set the tone right from the first defensive series. I'm surprised. Well, I can't say I'm surprised. I just wonder what is going to happen next with this secondary. What do you think of Vaccaro not being there?
You know, that's tough. I mean, you talk about a guy that's a pillar of a defense. He is. I mean, if you look at when they played against Baltimore last year or the year before, who makes the key interception in the game against against Baltimore?
And he called it, too.
And he called it. So when you have a guy like that that understands, you know, to be a leader, he may not be doing all the screaming and shouting, but he just demands respect, and he's consistently making plays. So I'm a scratcher on that, but, you know, I don't want to ever disrespect Mike Vrabel or J-Rob, but isn't that the guys that you want to keep on your roster that's unselfish, that's going to run through somebody's face, and that's not going to complain?
Yeah.
Those are the guys that you want, so you're starting to let those kind of guys go, and, you know, I don't know. I mean, no disrespect, but I just don't know. I don't know.
Here's the thing. My reasoning for this would be they're working from an area of strength to address an area of need. And the area of need is a pass rusher. But the area of strength is safety, right? Because, you know, now, okay, Amani Hooker will slide in as the starter, right? You have Dane Cruikshank as the Amani Hooker, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the draft. I know they like Elijah Molden out of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I believe there's interest in Josh Bledsoe as well out of Missouri. So these are a couple of safeties. And this class is full of safeties that could come in and produce. I think their reasoning is, okay, we'll just shift everything up as far as Hooker and Cruikshank, release Vaccaro, save the $3.9 million, and it's tough because you are losing a lot. And I think, you know, that gritty, that hard nose, that whatever it takes mindset that Vaccaro brings is definitely important. But, you know, I think there's another move that we need to look at. And from what I understand, yeah. it's a part of, you know, this next segment that we'll get into. Let me hear that, man. You hear the sample. I'm mad. Sanders is salty, and I want to know what you're salty about. I know because we left it out of the conversation. Normally, that's something we would probably start with, but let them know why you're salty.
Dude, Sanders is really salty, and I'm salty about they let Butler go. And I understand. Listen, I understand that you got to make decisions and you got to cut people, but if you went to him and said, okay, I want you to at least take a pay cut and see if you want to work it out, and he said no, now you cut him. But it's just flat out, you're out of here. I mean, he's a guy. I'm not saying he's the best corner in the league, but he brings a sense of toughness, and he brings a sense of an attitude. I mean, here's a guy who led the team in interceptions. He had two against Buffalo, one against the Packers, and one against the Jaguars. Who else had four picks? I know Amani Hooker did, yeah.
But corner-wise, no one else.
Corner-wise, but who else? Who else brings that grittiness? Who else brings that nastiness? Who else brings that, I'm going to show up and want to fight the coach from Baltimore? You see what I'm saying? you feel me on that?
Yeah, I hear you.
Who else is going to do that? Who else is going to be like, dude, I'm going to, I mean, who else is going to come and say, you know what, give me the doggone best receiver, and I'm going to fight him to the team. I'm not talking about fighting with fists. I'm talking about you ain't catching the pass. And we saw that against the Jacksonville Jaguars against Chalk. He shut his mind down.
Yeah.
So what are you going to find of that? Who in the secondary can bring the grittiness and the nastiness that Butler did?
And that's what I'm saying, because we saw that. I mean, you look at the game against the Steelers, right?
Yeah.
And the young fellow, number 11, what the heck is his name? You know what I'm talking about. From Canada that went to Notre Dame. Chase Claypool.
Oh, Claypool. Yeah.
And then, you know, he went up against A.J. Green. Okay, yeah, I mean, not the best option, but still, you know, a solid player. And then Allen Robinson. I mean, this dude back-to-back-to-back, cat coverage, that's your cat. He stood out. So, absolutely, that's something that you have to look at. And taking that out of there is very, very interesting. But I'll say this. There are some really good corners in this draft. But see, here's the problem, Chris, because let's say they go for J.C. Horn. Uh-huh. Let's say they go for Greg Newsome. You don't have to get these guys in the first round.
That's what I'm saying.
So now, okay, it's a nice situation to be in as far as, you know, looking at your board horizontally, but what happens if you don't sign a couple pass rushers? You know what I mean? And now you're like, okay, I need an impact player at 22.
Right.
He is probably going to have to be a pass rusher if we go defense. But we also need a corner. Like, that's the dilemma that they're going to be talking about when they're in that draft room. And I just don't know that it's the best situation to create another need like this. Because corner is right up there with edge now, in my opinion.
Yeah, but even on the flip side, is who was the ultimate leader of that defense?
I would say Simmons. But, Simmons, I mean, or Butler, Vaccaro. Right.
But then you're asking a guy to come in of an NFL team to lead automatically in the secondary when you already have a guy that brings that tenacity and that fire and that drive. I'm not saying whoever they pick, you know, is not going to bring that, but then you're just going to create another pressure of a kid having to be a leader when maybe he's not ready for that role yet.
And then also that's putting more on Rashawn Evans' plate, right?
And
Byard,
exactly.
Yeah.
Because Byard, we always hear this quote, pressure bus price. And I think that's a little bit what we saw with Byard this year, because now he had to step up and be the leader because Logan was gone. He went to the Jets. Giants.
Mm-hmm.
And so now you're taking all these leadership guys away and you're getting a whole bunch of young guys, which is great. But who's going to be the leader when the game's on the line?
And that's why I like the Elijah Molden option. But then with him, now you're looking at second round where, okay, let's say Corey Davis doesn't sign. Let's say he does sign. If he doesn't sign, okay, you got Tylan Wallace, you know, in the second round you'll probably need for outside. If he does sign, okay, well, Amari Rodgers, you're going to need, because remember, Adam Humphries was released too to play the slot. So now, like, there are so many. It's really interesting, and I get the whole situation with the cap. It was expected to be at 198. We're talking about a $16.5 million difference. So not everybody's going to be able to stay around. I understand that, but man, oh, man. They're going to have to, you know, have a lot of decisions to make. I wouldn't want to be John Robinson right now.
I mean, it's because here's the thing. This is one of those years where, you know, if they don't have a good year, now you're going to start, the doubt's going to start creeping in again.
Yep.
And you just don't want to do that. You know, J-Rob and Mike Vrabel has done a great job by building this team. And the reason why they built a great team is because they were putting guys that are hungry and actually leaders on both sides of the ball. But when you start taking those leaders away, like a Butler and a Logan and a Casey that went to the Broncos,
mm-hmm.
You just got to make sure you're bringing the right people in. And I'm not saying they're not, but you got to make sure they're doing that.
Absolutely. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see what happens. But, hey, you heard him. I'm mad. Yo, that's hilarious, man. Chris, I appreciate you coming on every week, man. We do the thing, and I won't call you Reggie Theus no more, man. Don't worry about that.
You look like the Chief. That's what you look like, the Chief. Robert Parrish. That's the name. That's the name, boss.
Hey, man, this is Kevin Byard, and I'm talking with TD. So let's groove with the smooth operator.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. You hear Big Daddy Kane, the smooth operator. Well, our next guest, he calls himself Big Smooth. That's what they know him as. We're going to bring it. We have to show love for the guys in the trenches. You know, Elijah, we got to do that a little bit more. So I'm definitely pleased to bring in Deontay Smith out of East Carolina. He is a prospect whose stock is soaring, almost like that GameStop stock. But Deontay, what's going on?
How you doing? I'm doing good.
Yeah, man. Definitely appreciate you coming on. I got to ask, though, you know, the Twitter handle, Big Smooth, like, where'd that come from?
Just something that kind of stuck through my freshman year of college, you know, through my teammates.
Does it have to do with just, like, your persona, your aura, how you come across?
Yes, sir. That's pretty much what it is.
It almost feels like I'm talking to bruh, man, from the fifth floor. About to go make me some sandwiches. You know what I'm saying? But nah, man, all jokes aside, man, like I said, I appreciate you coming on. It's interesting because in talking to you just this brief bit, I would never have thought that the same killer I see out there on the field is so laid back off of it as far as the conversation. How do you flip that switch when it's time to go out there and do what you got to do?
For me, it's mainly just, you know, football is what I do. That's my passion. And that's the sport that I play. So I go hard at it. That's what I'm going to bring out, all of my competitiveness. That's what I'm going to bring out, everything I have in me to be the best football player that I can be. But off the field, you know, I'm off the field. I don't need to be as competitive as I am on the field. I can be more chill. I can enjoy life a little bit more.
That's interesting, and it makes sense. I want to kind of rewind back to before you started playing football, and I know you have wrestling in your background. I thought that was interesting. How has that kind of correlated to you being a better offensive lineman and just transitioning into football so well?
Wrestling did a lot for me. My sophomore year of high school, after the football season, my head coach, he's like, Deontay, you need to do wrestling. And for me, I really didn't want to do it, but he had already talked to my mom about it, so they already had got like some a group going. So it really wasn't my choice. I was going to wrestle anyway. And that was one of the best things for me. It taught me a lot about body control, my hand placement, and just, you know, finding my feet at all times, finding my balance.
That all makes sense because I admittedly haven't watched a lot of you, but then seeing you down at the Senior Bowl, and we'll get into that a little bit later, but just in watching just how you were able to get your hands on somebody and lock on and turn them the way that you wanted to and just react, it definitely makes sense there. What were some of the biggest things that you had to overcome as far as like learning the game of football and moving from wrestling to being an offensive lineman?
For me, I've always played football. I grew up playing football. So football has always been a part of my life. I stopped playing for a little bit through middle school, and I started playing again in high school. So really what wrestling did for me was it was able for me to take – it taught my body things that were able to translate to the football field.
Nice. That's what's up.
It taught my body – they taught my body just how to bend in certain ways, how leverage works and things of that nature.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And I want to get into that leverage a little bit because, I mean, like, you're 6'4", so you're not that 6'7 guy, that 6'8 guy. How are you able to, you know, maintain that leverage? And especially, like I said, as a guy 6'4", it's always lower man wins, but I would imagine it's a little bit easier for you than some of these taller offensive linemen.
I wouldn't say easier because we all play a sport, so we all understand what we have to do our job well. For me, I just try to make sure, you know what I mean? Football is the game about inches, and you got to make sure your hands and your hips are in the proper places so you can get some movement and get generation power. So it's a combination of things.
Now, once you got to East Carolina, you had a pretty solid start, and then you had the injury, and then you came back, and, you know, your career has been pretty solid. You were even looked upon, voted upon as a captain. What were some of the highlights of your career at ECU?
Some of the highlights of my career are definitely, like you said, being voted as a captain of my team through 2018 through 2020. And, you know what I mean, just being able to watch myself progress, watch others progress, and be able to help others progress along the way, too. Just that camaraderie that I built in college so we all can just keep developing each other.
And looking at the offense, I mean, consistently, you know, that ball's in the air a lot. I'm sure that helped you as far as developing as a pass blocker. Left tackle position especially, working with different O-line coaches and things like that. How did that help you just learn just all different kinds of things that you need to be successful?
Yes, sir. So having three different offensive line coaches in college, all of them really teaching in different ways. It really allowed me to be able to adapt to what someone is trying to get me to do and understand, like, different ways they may be saying it, but ultimately what they're trying to get me to do. It also allowed me, you know, be able to understand, like, different tips and tricks. You know, each offensive line coach has guru tips and everything that they like to get out or something that they feel like will be done best. If it was done this way. So, you know, just taking those into account and remembering how to really use them when it's time to use them.
No doubt. What would you say were some of the gems that you picked up in the time? And we're talking to Deontay Smith, ECU left tackle, well, offensive lineman, I'll say it that way. What were some of the gems that you were able to pick up along the way just as far as just any, like, inside tricks that have worked for you?
For me, I could just say, like, in terms, I had a coach that taught a two-hand punch, and I had coaches that taught individual punches. So being able to incorporate both of those into my playing style really helped me out a lot. It gives me a chance to get the defensive lineman a different look, and it gives me a chance to showcase, like, different things I can do with my hands and how it can help me win reps.
And you got to play some guard as well, so I have to ask you, and it's always interesting, you know, hearing you guys talk about the difference, but for you, what has been the difference, you know, between playing out there on the island and then in there in a phone booth?
The biggest difference is, like we all know, guard, you're a little bit closer to that line of scrimmage, so everything's going to happen a little bit quicker.
And then as far
that's just the biggest difference, but you got to get back to your fundamentals and get back to, you know, how you know you have to play the game to be successful.
And I know that you feel that you're capable of playing both, but is there a preference?
For me, a preference is at tackle. I feel like I'll be a great tackle. I'm higher than 6'5". I think I grew in college. I definitely know I've grown in college.
Huh.
So I'm 6'5" now as of the Senior Bowl. And, you know, I just definitely feel like I have the athletic capabilities and the mental capacity to play time.
And speaking of the Senior Bowl, you led me right to that. Those one-on-ones, man, you and Quincy Roche, you guys were getting it on, man, out of Miami. And there were other guys, too. How was that Senior Bowl experience for you?
The Senior Bowl experience was great. I got to see a lot of the guys that are some of the top competitors in this draft. And it was able for me to show exactly what I can do, you know, with guys like Quincy Roche, who has a high motor, who competes well at all times, you know what I mean? Those are some good reps for both of us just to really get after it.
No doubt. And then as far as being down there and working with those coaches and getting in front of all those personnel folks, what would you say was the biggest thing you wanted them to realize after they watched you play?
I wanted them to realize that I play aggressive. I'm very, very good at learning on the fly, and I can take from the classroom to the field.
And you got to work some on the right side, if I remember correctly, during the one-on-ones. Big difference going from left to right? Is there, because I know some say that it is a big jump. Others are able to do it smoothly. What's your take on that?
For me, it's mainly just about practice and repetition. So you have to work at it for it to be comfortable for you. And for me, I had been working at it. I had a trainer out here where I'm training in Las Vegas. He's been getting me right on that type of stuff. Also taking some tips from Coach Myers, who is the Panthers offensive line coach. He gave us some tips before going out to practice and everything. So tying all of that stuff in together, it really helped me out to perform at my best.
What are they saying that they think is going to be the ideal spot for you? Left tackle, right tackle, tackle in general, guard? What's the feedback you've gotten?
I've gotten a great mixed feedback. So it's really a combination of everything. It's really a combination of everything, if I'm being honest.
Okay, I can respect that. And you said that you've watched a lot of football, like you played football growing up, so I would imagine you have watched it. Who are some guys just more recently that you've seen and say, you know, I like the way he plays. It's kind of similar to mine.
Kind of similar to me that I like the way they play is definitely Laremy Tunsil. He's a very stout guy, has quick feet, strong hands, plays very smart. There are a lot of different guys I take things from or try to look at, like Deion Dawkins and Trent Williams and, you know, different guys like that, Jason Peters. Especially back in the day, he was at his prime and everything. So, you know what I mean? It's just different things that you could pick up from. But as far as who I see myself playing like, mostly is Laremy Tunsil.
Interesting. And one of the things with Tunsil, he gets on the move and he's able to make those blocks. You know, when they're pulling him, that's something you do as well also. So how did you kind of get comfortable with being able to do that, just breaking down, not missing and just – blocking a guy who's smaller and in a lot of cases a little more agile?
You know, it's all about technique, and like I said, it goes back to that wrestling and body leverage and understanding how your body is going to move, and you got to understand where you're going to be at a certain place so you can be better suited to block him when he gets to that certain place and certain things.
And you mentioned the training that you're doing in Vegas. I saw a video, man. Box jump, 48 inches? What's that about?
That's crazy, huh? I really didn't even post another one. I really just got another one. I jumped 54 not too long ago. I'm just holding that one. I posted it on Instagram, but I'm holding it. So they've been definitely getting me right, getting me very explosive. So I'm very excited with my training.
What are you guys doing out there? I mean, is there any, like, are you focusing a lot on that explosion, that get off and those type of things? Because, I mean, that's not normal to be. What are you now, 294, 300? What are you weighing at, first of all?
As of today, I'm 302 pounds. I should be 305 pounds for my pro day.
So 305 pounds doing 48-inch, now 54-inch box jumps. How does that happen?
It's a combination of things. You know, they've been teaching me a lot about unlocking my hips completely, not just partially where I thought I was completely unlocking my hips. You know what I mean? It's more to it. And just about, you know what I mean, body control and using your muscles. And it's a combination of things that we do. You know, we do a lot of different trainings to help build explosiveness and strength. And so I've just been enjoying the process.
And now that you are out there doing all this work, who are some of the guys that are there with you? Are there other elite prospects like yourself out there training with you?
Yes, sir, most definitely. It's Antonio Phillips from Ball State, Tony Fields, Brevin Jordan, Deombo Lenore, Thomas Graham, a lot of guys who should be getting drafted this year also. So, you know what I mean? It's a lot of competition, and it pushes us all to be great.
That's really interesting. And then just to spin it back to the Senior Bowl really fast, I would imagine you met with all of the teams. This is a Titans show. Do you remember your conversation with them at all?
Not necessarily. I don't want to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It really was just a good intro conversation. With them, they have scheduled some more meetings with me and everything so they can get to know me more, but it was just a good intro conversation.
Got you. Yeah, the thing I keep getting and talking to some of the personnel folks with the Titans and talking to a lot of you guys, it was super speed dating. So I would imagine, you know, there are further dates to be set. Really interesting, man. Flipping the right tackle, is that something that you would be interested in doing? Because I've seen left tackle, like Anthony Davis out of Rutgers a long time ago. He was a left tackle, left tackle, left tackle. They flipped him to right, and he became an all-pro. For you, is that something that you could see yourself doing if a team asked you to do so?
Yes, sir, most definitely. That's something that my offensive line coach has always taught me. He said that I feel like you can be even better at right tackle. So, you know what I mean? Mm. It's something that, as an offensive lineman, I'm ready to play in any position.
Okay, that's what's up. And I know you're in Vegas now, but I will say this. When you were at East Carolina on campus, Campus Cuts, are you familiar with that organization, that place?
Yeah, sir, I'm familiar with Campus Cuts.
Yeah, for sure, man. My homie, one of my best friends, Trey Wade, he's the owner there. So he told me, make sure he gave you a shout-out, you know what I mean? So I had to do that.
Most definitely. I used to go get my hair cut there a good bit of times. I saw New Orleans before.
Oh, that's what's up, man. That's what's up. I have to make it down there. I haven't been down there yet. But, yeah, man, that's dope. Well, Deontay, I really appreciate you, man. Big Smooth in the building. And, man, I wish you the best going forward. When is your pro day?
My pro day is on March 30th.
There you go. That will be the day you unleash that 54-inch box jump. Keep them off pace there.
Yes, sir.
All right, man. I'll holler at you. Appreciate you, man.
Yes, sir. You have a good day.
All right, you too.
This is AJ Brown, and you're talking with TD.
I've been moving calm, don't start no trouble with me. Trying to keep it peaceful is a struggle.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD. Keep this thing going. It's draft season, so you know what we do. And every draft, I have to get my conversations in with my fellow wide receivers. And you heard Drake. That means we got somebody from Canada coming on. You know, they call him Air Canada. What's going on? We got Josh Palmer, Tennessee receiver. Joshua, how you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you? I peeped the Drake in the beginning.
That's right. That's right. You know, we got to make you feel at home. You know what I'm saying? Make you feel comfortable.
Yeah, it's all good.
Yeah.
Glad to be in.
Yeah, for sure, man. And I know you're busy, man. You're doing the media tour. Your agency, they got you all over the place, and it's good. That means you're in demand, and that's a good thing leading up to draft season. So I want to kind of just go to where I think a lot of this demand is really coming from, as far as those who are watching, and that's the Senior Bowl. We'll kind of start there and just kind of work our way around. I want to talk about one-on-ones and just some of the things that I saw you doing at one-on-ones. There's a lot of polish, you know, your releases, your awareness on the boundary, right, your ability to stack DBs and just still have that space to fade to the sideline, to give the receiver that cushion the QB, that cushion to drop the ball into. What type of feedback did you get from, you know, the personnel folks and everything after such a solid showing at the Senior Bowl?
I mean, in terms of feedback, you know, it was really just telling me good job and stuff on the practice field, of course. Not really a lot of meeting time after practices that I had with the coaching staff that were there. Just trying to be a reliable target for the quarterbacks that were there. You know, we never played with each other, so, you know, it's quite difficult on both sides of the ball. But really, you know, really just going into the Senior Bowl, I was just preparing, you know, over here where I'm working out at XPE, okay. You know, Tony Villani and, you know, Anquan Bolden has really been my mentor in this offseason right now training. So, you know, a lot of his teachings I was trying to put on display.
Anquan Bolden, that's a really good mentor, and he's a guy, you know, he was never the fastest, but he always knew how to get separation with his body. That's something that it seems like, you know, you have done throughout your career at Tennessee. And, man, you've worked with some pretty outstanding coaches then, you know, you add Anquan Bolden to the picture. So let's go back. Who was the receiver coach there at St. Thomas?
Glenn Holt.
Okay. So let's talk about that, because obviously somewhere the polish started to be established, right? So what were the things that you guys worked on? How did you really establish such a solid foundation there as a receiver?
I worked with Coach Holt for a while when I was there. You know, obviously I had him for 2 years, and then any time I'd come back to visit Florida in the off season in Tennessee, I'd work with Coach Holt, and you know, just really working on fundamentals, because you know, just being around Anquan, he would just tell me that the fundamentals is what separates a lot of guys, and once you mix that with your natural talent, you know, you can pretty much do anything you want. But just watching a lot of film as well on different receivers in the game. I watch a lot of Devontae Adams, a lot of Julio Jones, AJ Green, Keenan Allen, you know, just the greatest in their positions.
Keenan Allen's a really good route runner. Devontae Adams, the footwork. AJ Green is just a freak. Those are all good. What can you say about Julio Jones? So those are all really outstanding guys. Devontae Adams and footwork. Now, you had other sports that you played back when you were in Canada, correct?
Yeah, soccer and basketball.
There you go. And that's what I was looking for. You played goalie in soccer. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
How does that footwork – because tell me a little bit about how just the cross-training, how you're able to pull things from the different sports to help you become a better football player.
I feel like any sport nowadays, any sport really could help contribute to other sports, but in soccer, it was definitely just high pointing the ball, you know, never letting the ball really come to your chest. You know, in soccer, you really want to use your hands a lot. And, you know, like I said, high pointing the ball, balls coming fast, different angles. You know, the only difference is that football, if you catch it, you can't just bat it down like you can in a goalkeeper. But it's kind of become a habit, you know, playing goalkeeper is the low balls when you get your knee down to scoop the ball so the ball doesn't go through your legs. I do that a couple times in the game, but forget that if your knee is down in college football, you're dead.
Yeah.
You can't get back up. So that's one thing I have to unlearn.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And it's funny how that works. You know, you have to, like, eliminate just common muscle memory, common practice. But there are some things that carry over. Looking at you at Tennessee, 69 of your 99 receptions were for first downs. Is that a feel thing? What is it that, you know, allows you to be such an outstanding guy at just moving the chains?
Really just playing the game, you know, having confidence, knowing that you want to be a reliable target for the team you want and for the coaching staff that's with you. You know, obviously my team relied on me in a lot of situations, and you know, I just do my best in order to make that come to light whenever they need me, just being there.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And there's a lot that goes into that as far as being able to get behind the marker and make the catch there. And it's interesting you mentioned that you were a goalie, and because the thing that really stands out to me is just your ability to catch through contact. Is that something that you guys did through drills to work on, or how did you develop that such strong hands?
A lot of drills with Coach T, every receiver coach that I've been with at Tennessee. A lot of jugs, a lot of jug machines, a lot of working out with my jug guys that I call them my jug boys. We have a group chat, and we get on a jug machine every day after practice. You know, for 4 years I was there, but for 3 years, you know, we would get on the jugs every single day. You know, and just different angles, different routes, high point the ball, contested catches. You know, they would get on me. They would pee on me every time, but I just have to fight through the contact. So that definitely, they contribute a lot to my success, especially this year.
Shout
out to those guys.
What were some of your favorite things? And we're talking to Josh Palmer, Tennessee receiver. Josh, what were some of your favorite things working with T. Martin? Because that had to be interesting. He's been a receiver coach for quite some time.
Mm-hmm. Definitely his knowledge for the game. You know, he definitely helped me a lot learning the game from a quarterback's perspective. And tying that in with the receiver's perspective, you know, just knowing where to be in the right spots and how to maneuver yourself through different coverages and different defenses and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's obviously important, being able to, you know, adjust on the fly as the coverages move around. That's definitely something. I want to go back to the Senior Bowl and just look at some of the one-on-ones. All right, so 14, DJ Daniels. Tell me about that, because you guys were going at it.
Yeah. You know, when he came up to me in the during the Senior Bowl, was like, man, you were the only one that scored on me when I was at Jordan. And I said, well, for sure, let's put on a show while we're here.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were just going at it a lot. And, you know, me and DJ, we created a good relationship when we were there.
Yeah, and you mentioned the Georgia game. That was the one where you went up and attacked the football. That was a really good play there, and it kind of showed your ability. Outside of Dan, who else did you like that you got to go against one-on-one?
The Senior Bowl?
Yes, sir.
Man, no, there was a lot of guys on the other team that I went up against during the game. Definitely St. Jude from Minnesota, I went up against him in the game, you know, a fellow Canadian. You know, he's a pretty talented guy, and I enjoyed going up against him all game.
Yeah, well, what about during practice going against Melifano out of Syracuse, a long corner?
Oh, yeah, he's talented, strong. You know, when you go to the league, you're going to get up against a lot of big DBs, you know, a lot of strong DBs. So that was a good introduction to that.
Now, you mentioned go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, you know, and playing in the SEC, obviously I see that a lot with the corners that I play up against. But, you know, just being able to see to get out of the Senior Bowl was exciting.
Without a doubt. And then you mentioned A.J. Green is a guy that you like to watch. I would imagine in watching him, you saw the guy opposite him, Marvin Jones. And mm-hmm. He now plays for the Lions. He's a free agent now. But that's when I watch you, that's the guy that kind of comes to mind, just a lot of similarities as far as style of play. Have you gotten comps, you know, from some of the personnel folks that you've spoken to?
Sorry, can you say that again?
I said, have you gotten comps from some of the personnel folks that you've spoken to where they say, you know, Joshua, you kind of remind me of this guy?
I haven't got a lot of comparisons. But, you know, one guy that I have been studying a lot is Davante Adams, you know. Yeah. I've been watching his film for a while now, and a lot of the releases that I was doing at the Senior Bowl came from him, especially that slant route, some slant routes that I was running there. If you go back, you can see that he did the same exact release against Ramsey. So I was really, when I saw that, I was really practicing it in my room, and then I was like, yeah, I'm going to pull this out. So.
Yeah, it kind of like the basketball type of move, kind of like crossing him over. There was one where you did that, and like you completely turned the corner around. You turned to the outside, and you were right there for the slant. So that's an excellent point by you. As far as you as a player, like how would you describe yourself as a receiver? Are you more of an X? Do you see yourself as a Z? Where would you – and I would imagine you'll say both, but where do you think you'd be most comfortable with?
Mm-hmm. Well, honestly, most comfortable, I feel like I could be put in a situation, you know, I played a lot in the slot my last year at Tennessee. X and Z, I played both at the Senior Bowl. So, you know, Coach T used to tell us that X's and Z's don't go to the NFL, receivers go to the NFL.
Mm.
So, you know, I tried to develop my game and learn every position at the receiver spot.
Without a doubt. And what would you say is the best game for someone to watch? You know, I like the Georgia game. But if someone said, hey, listen, we want to know exactly what Josh Palmer brings to the table, what game would you say to watch?
Mm-hmm. I definitely say to watch the Georgia game, the Alabama game, the Texas A&M game from my senior year.
And what is it about those games that make you point to them? Because you went to them really fast.
Mm-hmm. Just sort of my ability to come in and out of breaks, high pointing the ball, attacking the ball, making clutch catches, blocking.
So it just really just showed the total picture.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That makes sense. And last thing, just as far as going to the league, obviously that's something that is in your future. How would you sell yourself as a receiver? What's your pitch? What's the affirmation you would give someone who is considering drafting you?
Man, I would say to where I am right now, is not even close to where I'll end up. You know, there's so much room for me to grow, and it's exciting to see how that's going to pan out and what team I'm going to be able to do that on and create a long-term relationship with. I'm always going to be willing to learn, and that's one thing that I value a lot, is learning something new every day, no matter what it is. When I get there, it's going to be constant improvement from the first day I get it to the last play that I ever played in the NFL.
Nice. That's it right there. I mean, you can't sell it much better than that. The potential, the future, and the growth. I like that. Well, Josh, man, I really appreciate you coming on. We'll definitely keep in touch, make sure everything continues to go smoothly for you. I really like your game, and thanks again.
All right, thank you for having me.
Yeah, for sure, man.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
All right, back from the break, talking with TD, continuing this draft series. Haven't really given running backs too much love this season, so this is actually, Elijah, I think this is going to be our first running back. Is that right?
I think so. If my memory serves me correct, I think this is number one.
Okay, well, what a way to start it out then. We have North Carolina running back Michael Carter. Michael, what's going on, man?
Hey, man. How y'all doing, man?
Hey, man. Every day is a good day. I'm with you. I'm happy to be here as well, man. I appreciate you coming on. And just kind of start from the top, man. Your game is very attractive, man. I watched the Miami game, and that obviously is a game that a lot of people know you by. But, man, you bring a lot to the table, so I appreciate you coming on and talking shop. Let's go back to the high school days, because I think it's good to see, you know, how you've gotten to this point. I mean, to be the 2016 Florida USA Today Player of the Year coming out of Florida, like, that's an extreme accomplishment.
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, Florida is the hotbed for football, and to be named the best in the whole state, it meant a lot. Even at that age, you know, I was a little bit underrated just because I got injured my junior year, but it is what it is. I feel like, you know, I got it back on the back end.
No doubt, no doubt. And high school football there in Florida is obviously a major thing. You went, was it American Heritage? Is that where you went?
No, we played American Heritage, but I went to Navarre High School.
Navarre, okay, pardon me. So just going through all of that, right, and getting to the point of where you were a top prospect, you know, going into college, what were some of the things just going along the lines, like how you became such a really good player?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, just consistency and work. I had a habit of like, whenever, like, the guys would go out, especially my freshman year, I would, like, you know, it's the same time spent, but I would just be, like, out at the little sand pit. I was, like, across the street from my dorm. And I would just do ladder drills. And so that's just an example of, like, the work never sleeps. And I feel like, you know, whenever I feel like I have a chance to get better, you know, I want to take advantage of that. And even at an early age, we used to run the dirt hills with my pops and my brothers and my friends. And, you know, sports are just, like, my definition of fun. So just being – finding different ways, creative ways to get better is the best way, you know, that I've ever been able to elevate my game.
I think it's interesting. You mentioned the sand pit. You mentioned the ladders. And these were things that you did in high school. Was it your pops? Like, where did you develop that work ethic and that desire to just continually get better?
Yeah, well, first of all, you know, my parents. They were hardworking people, and they always instilled that, you know, that into me, along with, you know, respect and loyalty. And then watching the greats like Walter Payton, you know, he was really the first one to run up that hill.
Yeah.
He really changed, you know, sports, you know, training just by running up the hill. Everybody wanted to do that. Everybody wanted to be like him. And so that was kind of where we got the idea from. But then you see LaDainian Tomlinson running later down the road and, you know, a whole bunch of other guys. But just seeing what other people do and how they got to the top, and, you know, creating, you know, your own type of, you know, work habits and based on, you know, that type of, you know, just watching the greats and watching others.
No doubt. We're talking to Michael Carter, UNC running back, future NFL running back. Michael, when you got to UNC, I mean, you had a pretty solid debut. I think that the one that stuck out to me was the flip into the end zone. What was it to being able to just have an impact so quickly at the D1 level?
I think it was my confidence in myself and my mindset going in. From day one, I enrolled in January, And, you know, I felt like my it was a goal of mine to play day one, game one, and make an impact, not just play, because I don't play just to play.
Mm-hmm.
I play to win. So just going in with that mindset from January all the way to, you know, September, I think it was September 2nd or September 4th or something like that. But just like whatever that game day was, you know, I wanted to be able to make that impact and kind of come out, you know, day one and have people know who I am, because this is my, you know, this is my love. I love football, so having fun and being successful are two things that I like to do.
You know, Michael, that's exactly where I wanted to go next, because you had the wrist injury that cost you some time. You just mentioned this is what you love. What is it that you love most about football, and what did you miss the most during your time out?
Yeah, so first, I mean, football is fun. Football is a place where I feel like I can express myself, and it's fun to me. And, you know, the guys in the locker room, I gel with them quick. And whatever locker room I've ever been in, you know, it's always been a place that I feel comfortable in. And, you know, guys, you know, that are relatable to me. You know, we all have the same goals in mind. And so, you know, the fun aspect of it, and then the competition too. Like, I love to compete. So, you know, having those things taken away from me, it really took a toll on me. Just off the rip, just because my grandma had died 2 weeks before that. So, having that, you know, my grandma was my biggest fan and, you know, my biggest supporter. She left, and then, you know, I got the game taken from me 2 weeks later. So it was really like, you know, it was hard for like, you know, a couple of weeks, but then, you know, going back to, you know, my parents and, well, my parents, you know, instilled in them, like, you know, trouble doesn't always last, and, you know, you got to keep it pushing and keep going.
So that's more or less what allowed you to push through such a tough time?
Yeah, definitely. Because I'm already motivated internally, but, you know, just with my grandma dying, you know, I wanted to do it for her.
Yeah, no, that's
what's up.
She
had a big impact on my life.
That's what's up, man. Definitely appreciate you mentioning that. You talk about competing. There hasn't been a shortage of competition at running back for you there at UNC. You and obviously Javonte Williams, you know, what was that like, man? Just kind of like, and I can't even say thunder and lightning, because you guys both brought the thunder and both brought the lightning, you know what I'm saying? So just how did that tandem work so well? How were you guys able to, you know, be a dual success?
Yeah, so I mean, even from my freshman year and then Vontae's freshman year, which is the next year, we always had running back that was, you know, splitting carries and you know, having to adjust to that lifestyle from high school where you're getting 30 carries in a game. You got to, you know, it teaches you to take advantage of your opportunities because you don't know when they're going to come. So, you know, fast forward to this past year, me and Vontae were both accustomed to, you know, maybe not getting as many carries as, you know, other people thought we should have had or whatever the case may be. We knew what we had to do when we got on the field. So me and Vontae are like, you know, we're like best friends. So I call him every single day, it feels like. But I mean, we both had a good relationship to where, you know, we never argue about carries. We never argue about anything. We've never argued. You know, we debate. You know, but it's never about anything serious. So it's just we haven't had that good relationship, and we both knew that we had to play well to win, and that because that's all at the end of the day, all we wanted to do was win. So,
and in that situation, when you do get that carry, it's like, yo, I want to make the most of it. But as a running back, and something that I've seen you do is you have to have patience. So, what's the key to balancing those two things and not trying to hit the home run, but hitting that home run still?
Yeah, so I feel like patience is an attribute that I feel like if a running back doesn't have, it's hard to play, you know, play well and excel, because you got to be able to set those blocks up. And that's a part of, you know, patience. You can't just sit there. It's one thing to sit there and let the blocks develop, but if you're helping, you know, the blockers, I mean, if you're helping the offensive linemen, you know, if you're setting their blocks up for them, which I mean by that, like putting them on their blocks and taking the linebackers where you want them to go, safeties, low safeties, et cetera, it makes the offensive lineman job easier, and they'll love you for it on the back end too. So that patience is something that I feel like is really important to a running back, and even like having the patience to burst. But when it does open up, you can hit it.
And that's the key, because there were times where I saw you just kind of allow that to develop, and then you hit it. But then there are other times where it's just time to – I get the ball, it's time to go. It's go time, and you did that. So that's interesting. And looking at you when you're able to get into the open field, I mean, we could go back to the Miami game, the Virginia Tech game. Those were, you had explosive runs, you know, long touchdowns in them. Did you run track in high school or anything like that, or that's just speed that you have?
Yeah, so I've always been, you know, I speed trained since, I mean, I've always speed trained pretty much my whole life. Honestly, like probably like into middle school, because it was just like able to, you know, even in youth football, you know, being the best is important. So I feel like, but I played baseball. I didn't run track. I played baseball. I played catcher.
Okay, played catcher. So,
yeah, like the little perfect game tournaments, the little recruiting trail. I was on all of that. So I would play football in the fall and then baseball in the summer and then go to camps for both.
Well, it's a good thing you stopped playing catcher, especially because that's very taxing on those knees, man. So well, I mean, baseball players get paid a lot, though.
Yeah, but I mean, my passion football.
So. Yeah. No, I was just messing with you.
You look at those baseball contracts, them boys getting $400 million,
bruh.
$500 million.
Hey, hey, you already know. You talk about you love football and you have the work ethic. I thought it was interesting, like from your third season to your senior season, right? A lot of times, like with COVID, and you look at actually Jim Nagy had an interesting comment. He pointed to you as one of the examples of the difference as far as guys who have that work ethic and put that work in, and it showed a difference as far as getting better from that year to this year. So for you, mm-hmm. What did you do during that offseason that really, you know, made a guy like Jim Nagy say, hey, look, this guy's an example of that?
Yeah, so when I go home, when I'm at home, obviously, you know, if I go home, that means I have some time off. So what I do when I go home, I got two brothers, and, you know, I got a group of friends that all play Division I sports. So we just go home and we work out in the morning, and then we might work out twice in a day. But we always work out and then go run routes. Work out and then go run routes. We do it every day, like even on Sundays, Saturdays. If it's like 4th of July, we might take that off or get a quick lift in and then slide out. But, I mean, we always work. Like, we're always working. And so we work and then we rest. And then we work and then we rest. And so, like, that's pretty much where I'm from. That's one of the only things to really do. So watching different videos and watching how other people, like what other people are doing to get better, stealing what they do, trying to apply it to, you know, our daily routines. And just like, for example, Alvin Kamara, the little ball drills that he does, like the little Bosu ball. And like, I, you know, we've been using those, but, you know, some of the drills that he does, you know, Dr. Reef is kind of like, you know, doing stuff that people haven't seen before. So that's just one example of just waiting to get better. And then along with Zoom workouts, Coach Hess at UNC, he called me one day. He was like, man, you think you can get the team, whole team on Zoom to work out? So without even thinking about it, we're working out two times, three times a day. And that's how we all took the jump as a team. But individually, I feel like that's how I took my jump.
That's what's up, man. And that's what you call drive. Let's fast forward to the Senior Bowl. And before we do, because we mentioned the tandem, I would be silly if I didn't mention that you and Williams have the top total rushing yards by a duo ever, 544 total. 308 of that was yours, we will say. But going to the Senior Bowl, what was that experience like for you? What were some of the things that stood out?
Yeah, it was a really cool experience. First, I feel like, you know, playing for the Dolphins for a week under Coach Flores was a really good experience. He's a great coach. He had a great staff. The players that I play with on my team and the other team, you know, because we got to mingle and, you know, meet each other.
Yeah.
You know, all the guys are great. Everybody's so, you know, good people. And it was a good energy the whole week. Guys are there to compete. The head is there up all night. But it's, you know, it's kind of like our first taste of the NFL, I feel like. And it was like I would recommend the Senior Bowl to anybody who's thinking about playing or not playing. I would say go, because it's not necessarily like a walkthrough week. I mean, you put some work in, but
yeah,
I feel like it pays off, because it's not like a shock to your system when you get to the NFL necessarily. It may be like you was able to take a stepping stone.
And you got to showcase your blocking ability, one-on-one pass pro drills. I mean, look, you know, let's face it, you're not the biggest back, so that's not something that someone just coming in would expect you to be good at, but you are good at that. Well, what's the key to being able to, you know, take on those linebackers and do some of the things that you did?
Yeah, first, I feel like first, you got to be able to want to, like, you got to want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's the biggest part, because, you know, there's an effort component to it. And then the rest of it is technique and taking away the inside. So just like something, that's something I work on a lot. And a lot of people say I can't pass protect, and I definitely can. But people that say that, they don't watch film. So it's something that means a lot to me. You have to take pride in that.
And then along those lines, just kind of going back to the college days, you know, it's really interesting because not all backs could be successful running out of the shotgun. So You have found success doing that. How do you manage to make that happen?
I think the best way is to, you know what you're like, know what play you're running, and being able to have your shoulder square, because there's a pro to being in, like, say the eye or the pistol, is that you can see the whole line.
Mm-hmm.
You know, from front side and back side. But if you're in the shotgun, as long as you get your shoulder square, you can see front side and back side just like you could. So the main key is just being able to keep your shoulder square. That way, if you want to go front side or back side on any given play, you can do it. Because, you know, if you turn your shoulder square to the front side, it's hard to get back to that back side, or vice versa. So it's just being able to have, one, know what you're doing, two, shoulder square to the line of scrimmage.
Michael, where are you training now?
I'm at Bomarito in Miami.
Oh, okay. That's speed work.
Yeah, definitely.
No doubt about it. For those who don't know about your game and don't know you as a player, because some of my listeners don't, how would you describe yourself? What do you bring to the table?
Yeah, I feel like, you know, just watching me and, you know, gathering information based on what other people tell me. I feel like I'm a complete running back that can do it all. I'm exciting to watch. You can tell I love football by the way I play. I have fun. I feel like after you watch me, I feel like you understand why. I feel like you understand, like, more about me by the way I play. I like to be creative in the way I play. And I'm always trying to score. So, you know, that's my mindset. I'm always trying to score. And I feel like I'm someone who just loves to compete.
I get Aaron Jones vibes when watching you. Any backs that you've watched or you could point to and say, you know, your game is similar to?
Yeah, you know, it's so crazy. He's a great guy. I met him. He's a great guy. And I hope they bring the Brinks truck for him, man. But
pay the RBs, man.
Yeah. Yeah, pay the RBs. Hashtag pay the RBs. But I feel like that's a great comparison. I don't really compare myself, so I let y'all do that. But you know, I'm grateful for that comparison that you gave me, because Aaron Jones is a great player.
Go ahead.
Sorry, my bad.
No, it's go ahead.
But I watch a lot of film, you know. So McCaffrey, Alvin, Dalvin Cook, those three guys plus Aaron Jones and Joe Mixon, Saquon. I mean, I watch from all of them, but the top three right now that I've been watching is Dalvin Cook, Alvin Kamara, McCaffrey.
All good guys. And the reason why I don't necessarily do comparisons, but I like to mention players that I know listeners know who they are, so that way they could get a taste. Okay, now I see. So that's definitely the thing. I like the way you said you don't really compare yourself to others, because there is only one Michael Carter. So that's definitely a good thing. Man, I appreciate you coming on, man. This was fun. What's up next for you? Pro Day, when is that? What do you have on the docket?
Yeah, Pro Day, March 29th. I can't wait to get out there. It's going to be a fun day, and seeing the guys again and making some money for ourselves and having fun with it. So March 29th, USC Pro Day. And then after that, you know, back to training, getting ready for the next step.
There you go.
Be the draft, and then so on.
Go get that bag, Michael. I appreciate you, man.
Appreciate it. Thank y'all, man.
All right,
thank
now. Take care.